The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hronco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hronco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the VC movement should be referred to Hronco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 blah. So which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hronco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you.
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Well, I don't know. I'm not playing here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, greetings and salutations and hello around the world. Bondo, don't go away. I'm sorry we had a dotchie right there, but it's just one of them things that happens here. But we'll take care of you, bud. Hang in there. All right, greetings, ladies and gentlemen, fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And fresh topics aplenty we have tonight. Once again, don't think I'm going to be able to get through everything, but damned if I'm not going to try to take it a little easier on each of the subjects. Maybe we can get them all in. Folks, want to start off with thanking everyone from the Berkshires for over the weekend. What a weekend we had. Everybody that turned up Friday night at the Brick, come see my band. I'm in the band. We had a blast. We really did. Thank you, all you folks showed up. And hooted and hollered. They wouldn't let us go without booking us back into the place for the next couple of months. They actually wanted us to come out twice a month. We told them only one because we were trying to spread this out a little bit, move around, and not get ourselves too tied down to one spot. But you know what, folks? We had a blast. Also, thanks to everybody who came out yesterday afternoon to Tim Ward's reemergence onto the music scene. Good to see Tim back out and doing it again after his harrowing medical ordeals. And it's a wonderful thing. Medical science is a hell of a thing. But on top of that, we got a lot cooking. We are 1 week away from the biggest elections that this country has seen in a long, long, long time. And it's, folks, I'm here to tell you, I'm not going to come down tonight and endorse any candidates. Next week, I will probably come out for a few of the candidates that are happening. But I do got to say this, folks, it is worth your while. Do not let anyone tell you that your vote does not count. Your vote is going to count for everything this time. Don't sit down and just say, well, you know, well, it doesn't mean much of anything to anybody. Well, yes, it does. And it's going to mean a lot to you and your immediate future. You know, whether or not you get out and vote in this election. I'm not going to sit here and tough vote for Republicans, but I am going to tell you that you owe it to yourselves at this point in time to go to your state's websites and ballots. See who is on these sample ballots. Do some research. Make up your own mind. Do not become, do not, A, stay home. Number one, that's the number one thing. This is a must election. This is the ejection election of 2010 where we get rid of the incumbents. You want to make sure you know who the incumbent is, and you want to make sure you know who it is that's running against him. And you also got to be very, very careful. I know a lot of people out there are saying, we're going to vote them all out. Well, make sure you take a look at who it is you are voting in there. The Democrats have got themselves stifled this time. Lots and lots of Green Party, Green/Rainbow Party Coalition. Candidates are spread all across these United States, all the districts out there in the House. Would I vote for one of them? Not in a heartbeat. You know, I might even have to hold my nose and vote for a Democrat over one of them. But the fact of the matter is, folks, you owe it to yourself to take a look. Now naturally, I'm going to be looking at the independents the hardest. You know, being a non-political party-affiliated kind of guy, I'm going to be looking at them the closest. But I'm here to tell you, folks, you know, that in a choice where there's only a Democrat or a Republican, guess who's getting my vote? It's going to be the Republican, and I will be riding his ass like he's a horse for the next couple of years. No doubt about it. You know, these people are going to have to understand and follow up on who these people are that you're voting for, too. You know, feel free to understand that you can call their offices in Washington. You can speak with their people. And if your ideas are sound enough, you will get to speak to the representatives themselves. It's not a hard thing to do. They do answer letters. They do read your letters. You know, never forget people who are candidates for office and those who have been into office always look at each opinion carefully and understand that for every single opinion that they run across, there's generally 2,000 people behind them that share that opinion. Now, you got 10 people who come up with an opinion that's all relatively the same. They're looking at 20,000 constituents that probably feel the exact same way, and that's a large number. This is how they extrapolate the numbers that they get, folks. Excuse me. So don't forget this, but take a good, hard, long look. Next week, I will definitely be going over some of the local ones here in Massachusetts, especially. We're all my local listeners and all the guys that are out there. Our state rep here is being challenged very hard by both an independent and a Republican, and we're going to see if we can dig up on these guys next week and come through with them. But in the meantime, the media, apoplectic, they are just going out of their mind trying to paint the Democrats as looking good. We're looking at headlines out there that are just unbelievable. And then some other, Obama, major push in the last week here. You know, of course you get into reading the article, and it's not like he's trying to get these guys to win. He's trying to minimize their losses. it's pretty funny when you get down to some of it. But some of the stuff out there is just, it's just blatant. I don't even know what the hell the word to use is here, folks. Take a look at this one here tonight, down off the Associated Press by Matthew Daly. Now, Matthew Daly does the worst job here of trying to paint the Democrats as looking good as I've ever seen. But here's his article, and it's a quickie. The Obama administration has approved a 1,000-megawatt solar project on federal land in Southern California, the largest solar project ever planned on U.S. public lands. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar hailed the $6 billion Blythe Solar Power Plant, to be built in the Mojave Desert near Blythe, California, as the start of a boom in solar power on federal lands. Today is a day that makes me excited about the nation's future, Salazar said Monday at a news conference. The project shows in a real way how harnessing our own renewable resources can create good jobs here at home. Now, the Blythe project, being developed by Solar Millennium, a German solar developer, is slated for more than 7,000 acres of public land near the Arizona border, some 225 miles east of Los Angeles. The project is the sixth solar power development approved by the Interior Department this month, all in California and Nevada. Approval of a seventh project, also in California, is expected in the next few weeks. All could start transmitting electricity by the end of 2011 or early 2012. At full capacity, the seven projects would generate more than 3,000 megawatts of power and provide electricity for up to 2 million homes. The projects are expected to create more than 2,000 jobs during construction and several hundred permanent jobs. A spokeswoman for the solar industry said the flurry of announcements shows that efforts made by the Obama administration and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to promote solar power are beginning to pay off. Now look at this here, folks. I want you to notice something right here, all right? This is, so far you know about a solar powered plant in the Mojave Desert. And you know that Obama is behind it, and you know that Ken Salazar has approved it. And Ken Salazar has also approved several others. And we also know that Arnold Schwarzenegger is behind him. And we go on to see that we're finally going to see solar energy produced on public lands in the United States. And this is something the public wants, said Monique Harris, a spokeswoman for the Solar Energies Industry Association, a Washington-based trade group. The announcements came about 5 years after solar developers began asking the Bureau of Land Management for rights to develop hundreds of solar plants on millions of acres of federally owned desert in the Southwest. The Bureau opened federally owned lands in 2005 to solar development, but an examination of records and interviews of officials by the Associated Press showed the program operated on a first-come, first-served leasing system that quickly overwhelmed its small staff and enabled companies, regardless of solar experience, to squat on land without any real plans to develop it. Now, to expedite environmental review and bureaucratic red tape, the Interior Department identified 14 of the most promising solar projects among the more than 180 current permit applications covering about 23 million acres of federally owned desert in the Southwest. Note, folks, okay, that the most promising 14 out of 180 have been deemed as most promising by the Interior Department. Okay, now it doesn't tell you what criteria they used here to deem which ones are the most promising, okay? But they, 180 current permit applications, and what did they have happen? Well, you just gotta love it. I'll tell you, folks, it goes on. Now, those 14 fast-track projects alone would produce more than 6,000 megawatts, enough to power 4 million homes for a day at peak usage, officials said. Now, Hannes, the industry representative, said that even after the 14 fast-track projects are approved, solar energy will remain a tiny fraction of overall energy production on U.S. lands. The projects approved this month are the first ever approved by the Land Management Bureau, compared with more than 74,000 oil and gas permits issued in the past two decades. How many in the past decade? That's what I'd like to know. Final approval by the end of the year qualifies the solar projects for federal funds under the economic stimulus law approved last year. Aha! Solar Millennium. Now, it's finally getting down. This is this company here that did all this. We haven't heard about until the last line of this article. It's called Solar Millennium, and it's eligible to secure $1.9 billion in conditional loan guarantees from the Energy Department for the Blythe Project. The company will be required to mitigate the project's effect on more than 8,000 acres of habitat for the desert tortoise, western burrowing owl, bighorn sheep, and a Mojave fringe-toed lizard as part of an agreement with federal officials. Now, you just gotta love this, because what this article tries to do vainly here is to paint the Obama administration, Ken Salazar, whoever the hell this is from the Solar Energy Industries Association, all as being the people here that are we got to watch for. The Democrats, they have their eye on this. When just a little bit of research here, okay, shows that this has been put together. This is a project. Now, I'm here to tell you something, folks. This project was, let me see here. And I got this article sitting here somewhere real close. Here we go. When it comes down to it, folks, the point that I'm trying to make here, this project is something that was put together by this Solar Millennium Corporation in joint with Chevron, who is nowhere mentioned in this here. Now, folks, this project's been out there for a little while. I saw on Modern Marvels or Amazing Machines, I believe it was on Modern Marvels, one of the Discovery / History Channel stations there, this whole thing being put together. It's actually been up and running here for some time, and it is quite a setup. It uses parabolic mirrors, what it does is it heats fluid up in a tower. Takes the fluid up in a tower and heats it up to 750 degrees Fahrenheit. That 750 degree Fahrenheit fluid, it is then pumped through heat exchangers to boil water, make steam. The steam is used to drive turbines, and the turbines produce electricity. It's a really cool way of doing it. What it does is it concentrates sunlight on, over a vast, sunlight that is falling on a vast area all down to one little spot. It's kind of like holding a magnifying glass up on an ant and watching it fry. Really what it's all about here. Oh, my goodness, I've got some hard every wonderful ads working down here this morning. And, folks, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get this one to stop, to be honest with you. But you got to... You talk right over top of it, it's coming in kind of low. Unless it's getting really hard here. Don't need any smileys, don't need any interest here. Just gotta love it. Might have to go back and get myself another green dick. At any rate, to get on here though, folks, point that I'm trying to make out of all this, this goes back once again to the various energy companies that are out there in the world who are struggling and doing their damnedest to try to move the energy systems forward. Don't make the mistake of thinking that oil companies out there are big, greedy companies who are not allowing anyone else to develop alternate sources of energy. Because the fact of the matter is, and as many of the shows that I have done here in the past go to prove, that these energy companies are our best bet for alternative energy. The oil companies are there. BP has been growing sawgrass, switchgrass, and a few other crops all around the world, working on biomass alternative energy. Chevron, alongside of this Blythe plant that is going up down here, is also heavily invested into geothermal energy. All right, we've got the same things happening with ExxonMobil. I'm not sure if it's Shell or BP, who's also working on the algae thing that's going to happen, coming, I believe, out of Maine, if not Massachusetts, where they're just growing algae as fast as they could possibly grow it. And take and render it right down into alcohol and other usable fuels. You can actually get a form of oil out of these algae that are, you know, that just reproduce heavily as long as you give them a nutrient-rich system and the right amount of sunlight, correct temperature of water. It's amazing how fast they will reproduce. Many, many things out there. But the point that I'm trying to say here is this, folks. It is the energy companies who are going to shine the light of the way out of this. It is going to be private industry that is going to find the way. All right? Now, all these oil companies are involved in this. No, they're not trying to lock everyone else out. The people that are trying to lock everyone else out of all this is, once again, the government. All right, monopolies do not exist without government help. They can't. They never have been able to. They will never be able to do this in the future. All right, this is just a major fact of life. You know, as stated down in that article, out of the 180 permits or so, 14 of them were deemed, the ones most promising. Well, what were those criteria to make them most promising? You know, was it the overall business plan of each one of these? Was it the amount invested behind it? Was the actual value of the ideas? Or was it something else that we don't know about? Was it backroom deals to get politicians reelected? Was it donations to various politicians' favorite causes? What was it? Well, that's the kind of stuff we'll just never know. You know, and that's what you got to be careful of. This is what you got to think about. This is what you got to really sit down and think about when you're looking at these things. Now, personally, I'm here to tell you that these companies, they all get involved in anything they can do to stay alive. Expect them. If greasing a palm is what it's going to take to get them to stay alive, you had best believe they're going to grease palms. And then you're not going to care if that palm has got a D on it, that palm has got an R on it, that palm's got an I on it. It doesn't matter. If greasing a palm is what it's going to take to move ahead, you goddamn better well understand that they are going to grease that palm. They're going to do whatever it takes. They have to in order to stay alive, in order to keep their business going, in order to keep the evil profits coming in. They're going to have to somehow or another manage to stay alive. You know, that's it. If they want to keep all their workers working, you want to keep their shareholders in dividends, this is the way it's got to go. All right, enough of that, folks. So that you understand, though. But this is, you know, but don't forget the whole theory behind all this. You know, as I started to say at the beginning of this article, look, the press is going nuts out there, doing all they can to try to paint the Democrats into a good picture. They try to paint the Obama into a good picture here. They're not pulling it off, at least not from where I'm sitting. All right, up on top of that, we got a couple more of them out here. Folks ought to at least be aware of this. You probably don't even heard too much, but this by Elaine Ganley off the AP. France's massive strikes opposing changes in the country's pension system showed some signs of weakening today when Marseille garbage collectors and workers at three oil refineries voted to end their walkouts. But the French finance minister announced that the strikes are costing the national economy up to $557 million each day, as workers continue to block other oil refineries and some trash incinerators to protest the plan to raise the retirement age to 62. Rotting piles of garbage, now at nearly 9,000 tons, are becoming a health hazard in Marseille. And trash collectors there explained their decision Monday to suspend their two-week-long walkout as a response to the mounting hygiene problems in the Mediterranean city. Ooh, think about that. There's not a wide health risk on the city, but we have noticed a worsening of hygiene and security problems. Well, if that ain't a health risk, I don't know what is. The head of the O Territorio Union said at a news conference, "We're a responsible union." But yeah, right. Well, fact of the matter is, what the French have done over there, look, they got to figure out some way to cut costs. All right, they are a socialist system. All right, make no mistake about it. Or let's say they have more socialism than us. For all of you libs out there who prefer to call this a mixed economy, you know, which if, I'm dying for someone out there to prove, you know, that socialism is an economic system. You just got to love it. Look, there's an economic system that results from socialism, but socialism itself is not an economic system, okay? Socialism is just a move away from liberty towards totalitarianism. That's all it is, okay? It is a form of crowd control. It is a form of controlling the masses, okay? Yes, you will have an economic system that results from it, but to sit down and just say, it's an economic system, well, no, sorry. You know, economic systems arrive. You know, that's what you have at the result of it. You know, capitalism, what we have here in this country, is the result of liberty. Okay? Socialism is the result of tyranny. All right? That's the way this has to be looked at here. If you're going to use your head, if you're going to stop and think about what it actually goes on here, you know, but to say, well, you know, people can voluntarily adopt socialism, you know, we could do it democratically. Yeah, well, that's fine. Well, what are you going to do with the people that say no? Explain to me, what will you do with the people that say, no, I don't want your social system. I don't want the economics that will flow from your social system. You know? Well, let's face it, at that point in time, that's when you got to wield that iron fist of tyranny, don't you? Because, hey, if they don't go along, well, then obviously you can't co-opt their resources. You can't steal their money, can you? You can't tax them. Can you? Well, of course not. But of course, you know you can always do that anyway, don't you? Because government's got the guns. Guns are there for one of two reasons: to protect you from tyranny or to inflict tyranny upon you. Which will it be? You know, which are you going to use that government gun for? To inflict tyranny upon yourselves or to save yourself from the tyranny? That is the big question. All right, and again, more and more, as I was saying before, crazy stuff going on out there. We got another one. Now, here's one that's just crazy, folks. This one down off the AFP just a little while ago. The U.S. government will allocate $800 million this week for construction of a high-speed train in Florida, linking the cities of Tampa and Orlando, local lawmakers and press reports said today. The money would raise to more than $2 billion the funds allocated for the ambitious project, the first high-speed train in the United States. This is fantastic news for Florida, said Senator Bill Nelson. This will ensure the state remains full speed ahead with high-speed rail construction. The Tribune reported that Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood told state legislators that $800 million would go for the Tampa to Orlando line. Another $8 million would go to study a future high-speed rail line between Orlando and Miami, the report said. A spokesman for the Federal Railroad Administration declined to confirm those numbers, saying an announcement on the financing would be made by Thursday. I just gotta love this. I'm sorry, folks. As much as nice as this is, $800 million okay, for something that will not go beyond the lines of the state of Florida. Well, where's the state of Florida on this? Where are the people who wanted this line? Where are the people out there who said, yes, I will ride that line and I will pay the ticket price of X or Y or Z to pay this line? You know, how many of these tolls were taken? What was going on here? Look, I'm sorry, but transportation is just one of those things, okay? Look, if it's going to work, it's got to be profitable. I'm sorry, but it has to be able to at least carry its own weight. If all it can do is carry its own weight, expect to have a system that will, you know, deteriorate in 10 to 12, 15 years and be worthless. Okay? If it's going to go continue onwards into the future and be able to maintain itself and do what it needs, make upgrades and improvements as new technologies come along, it's going to have to show a profit now, isn't it? All right? Well, fact of the matter is, if it has a profit, if this is a viable business, there should be investors out there lining up to throw money at it. We all know the benefits of high-speed trains now, don't we? All right? Or do we? That's the big point. You know? Mike Baer taking a good, hard look into by everyone out there. At any rate, Mr. Nelson, I'm sorry. I don't even know what party you're from. I don't even care. But for you to sit down there and somehow or another say it was okay for all of us to spend $800 million of our hard-earned dollars to go down to Florida for one little high-speed rail train that's going to run between Orlando and Miami, I'm sorry. It's just insane. You know, it doesn't work out. This is not your money. This is money that belongs to the federal government for federal purposes, not just for the state of Florida. Sorry. That stuff just doesn't go. Okay, now, a little one here before we get to the break at the bottom. You got to love this one. I'm trying to rip through everything here tonight, folks, and I think it's somewhat important. You're going to hear a lot about this one over the next week. Senator John McCain today accused Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, of directing some $20 million in earmarks to a handful of AIDS-turned lobbyists. In a conference call with reporters organized by Murray's GOP challenger, Dino Rossi, the Arizona Republican stopped short of calling Murray corrupt. But the one-time presidential candidate did accuse Murray of manipulating the appropriations process. A number of the earmarks go to former Murray staffers who are now lobbyists, McCain said. I think it's a corrupt practice. I know it's a corrupt practice. She engages in that corrupt practice. Now, whether she is corrupt, I will let other people make judgment, McCain said. Complaining about earmarks has been a favorite McCain activity for many years, and he's probably right on most of this here. Now, this is a long article. Well, it's not really. It's a short one, but I'm not going to get too much more into it because it is at the bottom of the hour. But just to let you know, folks, the mudslinging is going on out there, and McCain actually sling mud at a Democrat. Wow. I wonder if he's just trying to swing back some of the people to the Republican side of the aisle that he pissed off in the presidential election. Well, we will see. At any rate, folks, time for us to take a short break. Don't forget to head over to www.herncode.com. Take a look through the gift shop. Listen to the music and whatever else Bob has got cooking on the commercial side of things. And we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com. The best in Internet talk radio. Be right back, folks.
Caroline, if you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
I wasn't going to school because I was just making money stealing cars. And one day, I was put into juvie for two stolen cars, robbery of a house, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Well, I was 10 when I first got involved with drugs. I skipped school because, you know, nobody cared. I mean, I was on drugs, and my mom didn't really care because she was on drugs. She was never home.
When I first got pregnant, school was not important to me, so I dropped out. And now that I'm 15, I have two babies.
I was heading nowhere. I just thought, the only way I can make something out of my life is that if I get an education. One day I was locked up. That's when I really realized that, I mean, it wasn't for me. Like, I was only in there 2 months, but to me that was enough. It'd be better for me to stay in school, just get my education.
I still need to go to school to make it for myself. Stay in school. Give yourself a chance.
I think I'm happier now. I know I'm happier now.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
and people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Instadoo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com, the best in internet talk radio. All right, folks. Now, one of the things that might be going on here with this train is, it's either going to be for the trains. I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to look at some bright side of this mess. But at any rate, remember once upon a time, I would like to say that it was February of 2008. Probably in 2007. Matter of fact, I gotta stop and think here for a second. The automotive companies were basically looking at death. I mean, let's face it, it was a pure death. They had come out with the CAFE regulations for the automotive companies, and I had said at the time, it's time to give them a funeral, which is just what I did right here in the Politics Cafe. We knew it was done. I knew that they were done back then. They were going to get washed up. I really kind of thought they would get cast by the wayside. I wasn't expecting a government bailout at the time. However, they're back at it again, those same fine people. Yes, this came out about 2 hours before the show started tonight, down off the AFP network, Agence France-Presse. The United States today unveiled new standards for heavy-duty trucks, vans, buses, and delivery vehicles aimed at improving their fuel efficiency and reducing emissions by up to 20%. The comprehensive national program is projected to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by about 250 million metric tons and save 500 million barrels of oil over the lives of the vehicles produced within the program's first 5 years, the EPA said in a statement. The program will also have a positive impact on businesses as in consumers, as it drives down the cost of transporting freight.
That's why Lifestyle has started
a mission. Why am I getting slammed
with new mom programs?
Commercials, just gotta love it.
Lifestyle healthy habits.
That's some crosstalk here coming in off somebody else here, folks. And anyway, we're trying to keep right on going over top of this.
Disaster relief efforts.
We're gonna have to get a handle on this for next week's show.
You'll know it will cost yourself to a bigger.
At any rate.
That's why we started out
this
shit
for now. Visit Michael. Let's keep it for a second. Gotta love it the way you are. Just gotta love it. Nice commercials. Alright, at any rate, folks. Previous emissions and fuel efficiency standards applied only to light cars and trucks. The new standards call for manufacturers to make engines and vehicles that achieve up to a 20% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions by the time 2014 models come out, and an equivalent reduction in fuel consumption by 2018 for larger trucks. For heavy pickup trucks and vans, the targets are a 10% reduction for gasoline vehicles and 15% reduction for diesel vehicles by model year 2018. While for buses, the target is up to a 10% reduction in fuel consumption and CO2 emissions by 2018. Environmental groups hailed the announcement of the new standards, which will be open for a 60-day comment period, starting when the proposal has been published in the Federal Register. The Sierra Club, the oldest and largest U.S. grassroots environmental organization, noted that heavy goods and passenger vehicles covered by the new standards consume 20% of all road transportation fuel used each year, but represent just 4% of all vehicles on the road. Setting strong fuel efficiency and pollution standards for these vehicles will help break our dirty addiction to oil, increase our national security, reduce pollution, and save truckers and businesses money at the pump, the Sierra Club said. The Blue Green Alliance, a partnership between labor unions and environmental organizations aimed at creating quality green jobs, said the standards would help reduce our dependence on oil, strengthen the American auto and truck manufacturing sectors, create quality jobs, and reduce pollution. And Luke Tonichel, clean vehicles expert at the National Resource Defense Council, said the proposed rules would help change the image of heavy trucks and buses, which are currently the energy hogs of Americans' highways. With more efficient engines, aerodynamic bodies, and cleaner fuels, our nation's truck fleets can run cleaner and cheaper. The new standards will save truck owners and consumers money while creating jobs and reducing pollution in the process. You just gotta love it. I mean, what the hell are they talking about here? You know, among the new technologies that can be used to meet the new standards are aerodynamic improvements to the vehicle and engine and transmission upgrades. Really? Do you really think that that's going to work, huh? Duh. And do you think that these upgrades that are going to bring about this 20% reduction are there? You really think it's possible? Have you seen the science? Have you seen the physics? Have you seen the tests? Have you seen prototypes? Have you seen any of the technology that might be capable of producing this? Or, as is usual with the case of the dumbfounded Democrats, do you really think that just because you wrote a law that the laws of physics are going to naturally conform to what laws you decide to write down in the Federal Register? I mean, you just gotta love this. These people make up laws. Oh, well, they can do that. They're just holding back. You know, they're just telling us they don't want to do this because of their profits. Who are they trying to kid? All right, now listen, we got a hand up in the room here. Got someone named Tour Lord who would like to ask a question. Tour, I'm going to throw you the microphone. Question or comment? Mic's all yours.
Considering that Caterpillar has removed itself from the commercial truck market in the United States, what benefits are we actually realizing by these supposed improvements?
Well, that's just it. See, we don't know what the actual improvements are going to be yet. You know, and that's the thing. This is what we're looking at here is, once again, the government thinking that it can dictate physics. You know, that it can turn around and say this. Let me tell you something. After they took over the oil companies, or not the oil companies, but the car companies, excuse me there, they came up and they actually sent engineers and whatnot and different political people into, not so much engineers, but people into the car companies to start telling them what they want out of the cars that they're going to build. You know, and one of the engineers for Chrysler Corporation had to sit down in a meeting with these people from Obama. And he turns around and he says, they say to him, now listen, what we need is a car that's going to get, you know, between 75 and 80 miles to gallon, you know, is going to be able to, or be able to run on electricity. It's going to be able to do all of this, blah, 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 blah. And, well, the guy turned around and says, you know, he says, that all sounds really fine, folks, but you do understand that in order to have a car that's going to run for, you know, X amount of miles on batteries, you're going to need batteries that, you know, that are as big as the car. You know, that half of the car and its weight will be batteries, and because of that weight, it's going to lose its efficiency. You know, he says, there's no overriding the laws of physics. And one of those people from the Obama administration had the balls to turn right around, look at him, and says, what are you talking about, the laws of physics? What laws are they? We have the ear of the President and Congress. We can get laws changed to anything you want. Tell us who it was that wrote those laws and where they are, and we'll have them changed. Now, this is the kind of mentality that you're dealing with here. You know, and this is exactly what's coming down, what I see coming down in this here. You know, they think that because they write a law that the industry is just going to be able to conform with that law. You know, and it's going to be able to jump to it and do it overnight. You know, don't forget that they started with emission laws on cars back in the 60s. You know, when they started with the PVC valves on cars, it was just the first thing, something that was going to reburn the fumes that were coming out of your engine. You know, with the positive crankcase ventilation. Well, you know, look, it took from then until 1991 before they reached peak efficiency on automobiles. You know, and at that point in time, the only way to make the car more fuel efficient was to make the car lighter. It has always been a question of weight versus horsepower, or horsepower versus weight. Any way you want to take a look at it. You know, and the only way you're going to manage to get more miles per gallon out of a car is to lighten that car up. You know, gasoline engine, I'm here to tell you at this point in time, I'm not saying that they won't be making further improvements on it, but as far as efficiency goes, no, you can't. I'm sorry, we're at a point in time now where the emissions that are coming out of a typical car's tailpipe, and I'm talking about any car that's built after 1991, you have carbon dioxide and water coming out that exhaust pipe. If you look closely at a car sitting there running sometime, you know, you'll notice there's a stream of water coming out of it. Well, that's because that is a byproduct of the combustion process. Make no mistake about it. This is what happens. But the fact of the matter is, these people think that somehow or another, because they write a law, you know, and because they have the power almighty behind them, they have the guns, they have the power to tax us, you know, they've got the National Guard and everybody else behind them on their side, that as long as they say so, well, then it can be done and it will be done. Well, they're just once again wrong. You know, they don't know if any of this technology exists out there or not. The fact of the matter is, if any of this technology did exist, all right, it would be being sold out there to very hungry truckers and to very hungry trucking companies who would love to have more fuel-efficient vehicles out there. Now, I'm here to tell you, folks, that all this is going to end up doing is either going to be A, putting them out of business here at home, you know, at which point we will be either importing trucks and buses from overseas, or what I really see happening here is a big increase in the one system of transportation that actually is more fuel efficient, and that would be railroads. Excuse me, all in all, railroads probably are the single most fuel efficient system for moving freight across the country. You know, however, railroads don't go everywhere. They don't go into every single little town. They don't go into, you know, up and down streets and allow, a truck to deliver things right to your door. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to make a change here. Now, what these changes are going to bring about down the road here, nobody's going to really know until they come and see them. But, I think Obama's insane, too. Well, the insane part about it is the people that he's got behind him. You know, that is the nutty stuff. But it's crazed. It's just plain crazed any way you look at it. All right, getting on here. We got to gotta keep moving here tonight, folks, because, like I said, I had a lot to cover. Now, as you remember last week, okay, once again, got to love the Democrats over in the House side there. They are the more ridiculous ones in the Senate. But the Senate here evidently is seeing how ridiculous the House is being. The Senate is unlikely, this by Donna Smith down off the Reuters Network, and as always, usual disclaimer, all articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. The Senate is unlikely to take up pending China currency legislation following a weekend promise by the group of 20 economic powers to shun currency devaluations for trade advantage, analysts said on Sunday. Finance ministers from G20 leading and emerging economies agreed at a weekend meeting in South Korea to refrain from competitive devaluations of their currencies and to pursue a full range of policies to reduce excessive and external imbalances. And what do we mean by excessive internal imbalances? Well, it doesn't really say that. You just got to remember that these are smart people, baby. And they know better than us. Congressional elections will be held in the United States on November 2nd, and only a few weeks are planned for a post-election session in which Congress has to tackle major spending and income tax issues. There was little chance, even before the G20 meeting, that the Senate was going to act on legislation passed by the House of Representatives aimed at pressuring China to raise the value of its currency. But pressure to act has been mounting from some lawmakers and U.S. manufacturers hurt by China's trade advantages, and it has been an issue in some election campaigns in industrial states like Pennsylvania. The G20 agreement buys Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner some time to pursue a diplomatic approach with Beijing over the value of the yuan. I think he bought some time with the Congress, at Donald Strassheim, Senior Managing Director for China Research at a ISI group in Los Angeles. The Senate isn't going to take this up in a lame duck session. There is just too much potentially to lose, not enough to gain. They'll leave this until the next Congress. The November 2 elections will determine which party controls the next Congress and which will be seated in January. Republicans are poised to make big gains and possibly take control of the House. Democrats are likely to retain slim control of the Senate, with Republicans expected to pick up a number of seats. I don't think the Senate, are ever going to take it up, the China's currency legislation, said Paul J. Markowski of Global Strategies Analysis Group, MES Advisors, a New York consulting group. Now, Geithner is going on here. You know, he met briefly with Sunday with Vice Premier Wang Qishan in eastern China. And he may have secured some promises from the Chinese to take actions on his currency, but it will take time, Markowski said. Excuse me. The main aim of the 2 days of finance minister talks, which precedes a G20 summit in Seoul on November 11-12, was to ease the currency strains that some economists fear could escalate into trade wars. U.S. officials said they were pleased with the main point of the G20 agreement, although it stopped short of setting any targets to reduce trade imbalances. There was little reaction on Sunday from lawmakers who claimed Chinese yuan is misaligned in value, distorting trade and stealing U.S. jobs. But a spokesman for Senator Debbie Stabenow said the Michigan Democrat would push to pass the currency legislation. This is unbelievable. Now, you understand what's going on here, folks. We have been devaluing our currency at such an alarming rate that it isn't funny. Watch Glenn Beck's show today for just a little while. Glenn Beck turned around and said, you know, that if we painted inflation, or if we measured inflation by the standards that we used in 1980, excuse me, boy, this cough has got me bad, that real inflation today would be looking at about 10%. You know, and he's been making the same comments that I have. If you've been watching your grocery bill, if you've been looking at your heating costs, if you've been looking at your utility costs, you know, all of these things have been climbing up at an alarming rate. Somehow or another, the government is up there trying to tell you that inflation's only down to 1%. You know, well, inflation as measured by the government has been changed so many times over the past 20 years that it is barely recognizable as a real figure for inflation. Now, it's supposed to be the figure that the Federal Reserve uses to adjust its interest rates up or down to basically adjust the supply of money in this country, you know, to keep inflation at bay. That was one of the reasons we have it, one of the reasons it's set up the way it is. All right, well, obviously, it's not doing a very good job of it. It can't. And when it turns around and they start doing things like rebuying back their own bonds that they sold, okay, which is nothing more than a measure of quantitative easing. All right, what they are doing is buying back bonds with money that they have printed out of thin air. All right, putting that money out there. And I'm sorry, folks, but all that this money does when it hits is lowers the value of all of the money that's currently in the marketplace. When you have a marketplace that right now is becoming more and more dear for goods and services, all right, the fact of the matter is you get too much money chasing too few goods, you have inflation, and it's coming your way. All right, make no mistake. Well, you folks out there, everybody that's listening to this knows this. You're all buying groceries. You know all what's happened here in the last 2, 3, 4 years. It's gone insane. You know, I would say inflation over the last 2 years in grocery bill, 30%. Easy cheese, 30%. I've been doing all the shopping for this family here for a long time. You know, and I have watched my bill go from what I would say 2 years ago. I would get out of that grocery store for somewhere between $150 to $175 a week for groceries, feed a family of five. Well, now I'm looking at $300 each week. I'm sorry, but that's 30% any way you look at it. Maybe even more. You know, if we had a good week, I would go $200 on stuff. But now, I went in this grocery store with $300, and I couldn't believe that I had cut it to the penny the other day. You know, came right out of there with 10 cents change in my pocket. Thank God for all the coupon specials and everything else that I was working off. And I'll tell you, I'm getting to that point now where I really should be sitting down cutting more coupons. You know, but the fact of the matter is, for us to sit here and do what we're doing with our currency and then to turn around and tell the Chinese what they should be doing with their currency is just plain insane. The Chinese know better. Never forget, folks, the Chinese are the people on this planet that invented paper money. Okay, they know full well that it is just plain wrong and totally dishonest to be printing a paper note that has no backing whatsoever behind it in some treasury somewhere within your borders. It's that simple. They knew this. You know, for anyone who would be pulling a move like that back in the day of China, you know, what was reserved for them was what was called the death of a thousand. Death of a thousand was quite a nasty thing. You were put into a room with an executioner, and the executioner had a wicker basket in front of it. And inside of that the basket that's sitting in front of him were 1,000 little slips of paper. And on each one of those 1,000 little pieces of paper was written some method of torture. You know, something like peeling off a fingernail or shoving a splinter off another fingernail, cutting off your nose, cutting off your ear, cutting off the tip of a finger, you know, 1,000 different means of torture. Now, there were 4 pieces of paper that were in there that meant basically instant death. And he would pull each one of those pieces of paper out in turn, open it up, and perform whatever it said on it. And this is serious stuff. You can read about this. Marco Polo wrote about this, you know, a long time ago, and this continued right up on into the 1800s. But fact of the matter is that they would keep going. Now, if one of those 4 pieces of paper that had instant death came to the top, you could go for it. As a matter of fact, what would happen a lot of times is that families would bribe the executioner to bring one of those 4 pieces of paper to the top pretty damn quick. You know, and the more he paid, the quicker it would come up there. But there was no escaping the executioner. You were going to die. You know, you could not pay the executioner to let you go. You were not going to pay to get them out of there. Whatever crime it was you committed, especially one of faking the currency or of trying to pass a counterfeit currency that had nothing behind it, would bring you to that death of 1,000. You know, make no mistake about it. So for the Chinese to sit here and react to our Democratic Congress, which they are already laughing at, for them to react to Timothy Geithner, who thinks he's going to go over there and negotiate them into devaluing their currency by printing more of it, they have to be out of their goddamn minds. It's not going to happen. There is no way in hell. Forget that. You know, for them, if they think that they're going to pull off with their currency what we have been doing with ours, sorry, Chari, but that one just ain't going to flush. No way, no how. All right, now, heading on in here. A lot of stuff out here in the news tonight is, what do we got? Basically opinion, folks. You know, the more that you're looking at it, the more news that we have out there tonight, nothing much more than just, you know, it's opinion. Tons and tons and tons of opinion. I did have one other one that I wanted to get into here, but I might be, blah, 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 blah. Oh, one of the big things it's going to look at here, and this is something you can look at, and it's going to happen in your states and a lot of different states out there. This is by Jennifer C. Carr down at the AP. The Republicans expected gains next week go way beyond Congress. The GOP could capture new Senate or House majorities in a dozen to 18 states, along with critical new power to redraw district maps and influence elections for a decade to come. 3 of the biggest prizes are New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. All 3 states are expected to lose seats in Congress as a result of the 2010 census, and that's sure to ignite boundary fights. Party's congressman on the wrong end of redistricting can find the district he's represented for years no longer exists. Democrats have some hopes, too. They aim to take away state control in Michigan and Kentucky and the House in Texas and Tennessee. Texas would be a particular victory since it seems likely to have 4 more seats to divvy up under the new census. But none of the analysts contacted by the Associated Press predicted that Democrats would succeed in any of those states. Now, both houses in Florida, a state that's expected to gain 2 seats in Congress, are likely to remain under GOP control. While most of the attention in next week's midterm elections is focused on races for governor and Congress, results and scores of local down-ticket races carry far-reaching implications, likely to dilute Democrats' dominance in the once every 10 years redrawing of political district boundaries for the U.S. House. In most states, redistricting falls to the legislature, which will draw new boundaries based on the 2010 census. The party in control has a huge advantage. It can draw district lines that could determine whether Republicans or Democrats dominate a state's congressional delegation for an entire decade, and possibly even control of the U.S. House itself. There's a big historic trend that points to this being a Republican election, said Tim Story, an elections expert at the National Conference of State Legislators. It's tough for the party in the White House to win in midterm elections at the state legislative level, and Democrats are really at a peak of seats right now. Now, if Republicans pull off a landslide next week, Story sees the GOP taking majorities away from Democrats in as many as 18 legislative chambers. In New York, Democrats took a slim 2-seat majority in the state Senate in 2008, giving the party full control of the legislature. The Empire State is expected to lose 2 congressional seats in the upcoming reapportionment. The GOP needs to retake the state Senate to have any voice when those new lines are redrawn next year. There are a couple more stories like this, folks, about Pennsylvania, Ohio, and whatnot. But getting the drift here. All right, folks, it's been real. I gotta admit, I don't think I got through everything tonight, but I think I got enough here for you to all keep thinking about what's going on here next week. We have elections coming next week, folks, and they are a big election. Don't let anyone talk you out of this. You know, go and vote. Vote your conscience. Please, take a look at at your candidates. Go. You're on your computers. Sit there at your computer before you leave here. It's going to take you two minutes or less to, you know, go to Google or go to Yahoo or any of your favorite search engines. Type in there, your state's 2010 sample ballot. And you'll take a look on there and you'll see who's running for everything. And then take a peek. Take a couple of minutes and Google up each one of those names and see what you can find on it. You will find where these candidates stand. Pick the candidate that you think is going to do the best. Pick the candidate that you think is going to draw this government back down to a manageable size. Pick a candidate who's going to take us back to what our founding fathers wanted for the national government. You know, a limited government that was there to secure the liberties of the people. You know, not to provide everything from cradle to grave under the threat of a gun. You know, not to be the tyrannical government. You know, take some time. Remember what they were said in the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist papers. Know, about how the Federalists were telling us this was going to be a very, very limited national government, limited mostly to doing one thing and one thing only, securing your liberty, to having an army and an army and navy and marines that would protect us, you know, to do some other useful things. Yeah, roads and a post office. Yeah, we're not going to forget the roads and a post office. And we're also not going to forget the roads and a post office, you know, for the most part, take care of themselves. Although the post office hasn't been doing so well lately. But, you know, fact of the matter is, folks, our federal government has gotten way beyond its bounds. You know, there is no constitutional mandate, no requirement whatsoever for a Department of Energy, for a Department of Education, for a Department of Health and Human Services, for a whole mishmash full of departments that are in there, being handled on the federal level, which has been robbing you in your communities and your states of the power to determine your future in these areas. You know, make no mistake about it. When the federal government is doing something for someone, it is taking something away from someone else. And if you look hard, the biggest thing that they take from everyone else is their right to self-determination. You know, the right of your community to self-determine what it needs and what it does not need, okay, is being taken away by a federal government when you elect for these different things. You know, you got to stop and think about this. You know, can your community, which probably formed all of the healthcare industry in your community, continue to sustain it? Or is it the amount of federal regulations and federal taxation going on making that impossible? You know, can your state government have a good education system? Has your town got a good education system? Or is it now reliant on the federal government for not only its funding, but also the mandates on what it's going to teach? You know, there's many, many, many reasons why we need to get this federal government back down to a manageable size, back down to its constitutionally mandated powers. Take the rest of them to remember that the 9th and 10th Amendments guarantee to the states, you know, their powers of self-determination. That's what it's all about. Well, with that, folks, though, we've hit the top of the hour. Time for me to go take some more medicine. Time to close the show down. Yeah, well, you know where I'm going to find the medicine, right over at the bar. And once again, you know, chairs are getting piled high on the tables, the lights are getting dim, the meter D's got himself pretty well worked up here, folks, and finished up on his way out. But the bar will be open. Much medicine to be had at the bar. So, folks, hang out here in Politics Lobby 4. I want to thank everybody in the room here tonight. Politics Lobby 4 over on paltalk.com. Don't forget, you can always find us here. And I want to say thank you very much for coming in. And don't forget, we will be back next Monday night with the election predictions and with my comments on the local elections that are going on here in Massachusetts. All right, yes, hot buttered rum. That sounds so good, Natalie. I'll wear it right down behind that ice Stella there. Yeah, we get some alcohol cooking here. That'd feel a little better. All right, folks, but good night from the Politics Cafe and all of us at www.herncode.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Good night, folks.